This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, July 27th. I'm Angela Denning. An estimated 16,000 pounds of chum salmon were destroyed after a truck overturned in downtown Juneau Monday afternoon. The spill blocked Egan Drive, a major roadway leading in and out of downtown. Jason Wired is with the Department of Environmental Conservation's Food Safety and Sanitation Program.
We have a limited number of processors here in town that can handle that volume, so I just started making some phone calls to find out whose fish it belonged to.
He says Taku Fisheries, a local business, owned the truck. The business name on the totes was Icy Strait. Wired says the fish were destroyed after being considered unsafe for consumption since they fell onto the roadway. News of the accident quickly spread through town, with some drivers holding up traffic by taking photos.
I think time of day was a big issue, you know, right at that 5 o'clock traffic, right downtown when people are trying to get in and out of town, had a big impact on that whole fiasco. And, yeah, and today with social media being the way it is, it was instantaneous. Everybody kind of knew.
Although it's rare for a truckload of spilled fish to block a major roadway in the capital city, Wired says it's not the first time.
I think it has happened in recent years, just on a smaller scale. I believe one of their competitors, it happened where they lost a tote of fish. A single tote, by the way, not 16 totes.
The truck driver was taken to the Bartlett Regional Hospital and released the same day. The overturned truck caused a traffic jam for roughly 3 hours. After roughly a dozen employees from Taku Fisheries helped pick up the fish, the road was cleaned and sanded. Taku Fisheries could not be immediately reached for comment. 46 crew members were rescued last night after their fishing vessel started sinking in the Aleutians, and now officials are working on a rescue plan for the abandoned trawler. The Alaska Juris began taking on water yesterday afternoon near Kiska Island, nearly 700 miles west of Dutch Harbor. Crew members donned survival suits, sent a distress signal, and jumped ship for 3 life rafts.
These individuals, all these 46 people, are actually extremely lucky.
Petty Officer John Paul Rios says the U.S. Coast Guard received the distress call and coordinated the response from Kodiak. 3 Good Samaritan vessels joined the rescue effort, along with a Coast Guard cutter, 2 C-130 airplanes, and 2 helicopters.
While they were taking the people off of the life rafts, putting it onto the Good Samaritan vessels, we also had a total of 4 aircrafts in the air, just making sure that nothing went wrong.
With all crew members safe and on their way to ADAC, Rio says the Coast Guard is now focusing on what to do about the Alaska Juris, still floating in the same area of the Bering Sea. He says a C-130 search crew will fly over the abandoned vessel today and assess the situation.
They're going to fly over where the vessel's last known position was. They're going to try to determine if there's any kind of pollution, and then also what the salvage plan would be if possible.
There's no word yet on where the ship will be taken, according to officials with the Coast Guard's Marine Safety Detachment Unit in Dutch Harbor. It'll depend on whether the vessel can be repaired and how its owners want to respond. The trawler is owned by the Fishing Company of Alaska. Another FCA ship, the Alaska Ranger, sank back in 2008 and killed 5 people, while the National Transportation Safety Board determined the company failed to maintain a third vessel, the Alaska Spirit, when it caught fire in 1995. The Coast Guard is now investigating the current incident on the Alaska Juris. Officials say there were calm seas and limited visibility when crew members were rescued. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski stopped into Petersburg last night for a meet and greet at the Sons of Norway Hall. She's running for re-election, starting with the primary race on August 16th. She's going up against 3 other Republicans who aren't as well known, Thomas Lamb and Paul Kendall, both from Anchorage, and Bob Lochner from Wasilla. At last night's gathering, Murkowski spoke about what she's accomplished in the Senate, but she spent most of her time taking questions from the audience on Southeast issues. I created this audio postcard of some of the discussion.
Nobody in Philadelphia at the Democratic Convention or nobody in Cleveland at the Republican Convention last week was talking about what's going on with harbors in Petersburg, Alaska. They were talking about stuff that is, I guess it's important in the bigger scheme of things, but at the end of the day, so much of what I do to represent you in Washington is the things that don't make the national news. Let's talk about GE salmon first. You use the proper term, genetically engineered salmon. It makes it sound acceptable because, you know, we're in such a high-tech world. So I usually just call it Frankenfish. I usually scowl and sneer when I say it. They tell us, you don't need to worry about this fish escaping. You don't need to worry. We're going to make sure that they're sterile. You don't need to worry. You don't need to worry. I worry. I worry and I will worry until we have absolutely shut it off and killed it. When they say, well, this is going to help with American jobs, they forget to tell you that, well, the eggs will be coming out of Nova Scotia, and they will be raised in pens in Panama. So last I checked, Nova Scotia nor Panama were part of the United States, so I'm not quite sure where we get the American jobs there.
Is there some real feasibility and some potential for helping small communities develop from tidal, or for that matter, you can also touch on more hydro things? We know they're desperately expensive, but seems like tidal is something that we should have been moving earlier on.
Well, I happen to think that tidal, marine hydrokinetic, ocean energy, this is exciting stuff for a state like Alaska, and particularly small coastal communities that far too many of them are still reliant on diesel. Another piece that we have in the energy bill that impacts us down here in Southeast is the support for hydropower. We still, in our federal policies, do not recognize hydropower as a renewable energy resource. We changed that in that, and by changing that, we also allow hydro to be the beneficiary of some of the renewable energy tax credits. Right now, we have a relicensing that is going on around the country with all of our hydro. And we're not talking Bonneville Power Hydro. We're talking about, you know, Tyee. We're talking about Mahoney. Do you realize that on average, it takes 10 years and up to $50 million to re-license a hydro facility? An existing facility, we're not talking about doing anything new. Not doing anything new. So we've got a very considered look at how we deal with hydropower.
So I have a question that ties, or just a comment that ties into the cost of living point that you made. I'm on the Borough Assembly. We're very concerned about reauthorization of secure rural schools, particularly in this Alaska economic climate.
As you know, secure rural schools has just been a panic attack every year, and right now it's on the glide path out. It's been on the glide path out for a while. Our fight is a difficult one with secure rural schools.
My only other comment, this is a personal one, is I wish that there was a special provision in that highway bill for transportation that's water-based, because what happens is all of that funding goes toward roads in Alaska, and our scenic byway, that is our lifeblood and our lifeline, gets shortchanged.
We have funding in the highway bill for ferries, but as I was explaining to somebody earlier, it will help you with your infrastructure, but operation and maintenance, you know, nothing. Far too many Alaskans, of the 720,000 Alaskans that call this place home now, have never been to Southeast, have no idea what the Alaska Marine Highway System is. They don't, when we talk about ferries, they think it's pixie dust. They don't know. And so when your legislators are advocating for more support, they get kind of this blank look, like, yeah, why are we funding the cruise lines? And so this is something.
And these are just some of the topics that U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski addressed in her two-hour gathering last night at the Sons of Norway Hall. You can listen to the full question and answer session that lasts 1 hour and 34 minutes. It's posted on our website, kfsk.org, or visit us on Facebook. delegates at the Democratic National Convention yesterday officially nominated Hillary Clinton, but Bernie Sanders' delegates protested and booed during the entire event. It's still not clear if his ardent supporters will lend a fraction of their enthusiasm to Clinton. Alaska Public Radio's Liz Ruskin spoke to some of the Alaskans in Philadelphia who say what the Sanders fans do next could turn the tide of history.
For many of the Alaska delegates, the day started with a breakfast buffet in a hotel meeting room that they shared with the Wisconsin delegation. Special guest, Senator Bernie Sanders.
So let me conclude by thanking all of you for the support that you gave the political revolution, and I continue to look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you all very much.
Sanders spoke mostly about policy and almost in passing told his supporters they should work to ensure Clinton, and not Donald Trump, wins the White House. Sanders left like the Pied Piper, trailing a bevy of his passionate Alaska fans. The Alaskans followed Sanders down the hallway to the next breakfast for a different group of delegates, but attendants blocked them at the door.
Going to Iowa, you guys aren't all going to
Gavin Hudson, a Sanders delegate from Metlakatla, stood outside the Iowa breakfast. He loved what the Vermont senator told the Alaska delegation.
It's not just celebrity. It's not just because he's popular or that I like him. The best part about Bernie Sanders' speeches is that they're all focused on the issues.
It was just hours before the nomination, but Hudson said Sanders had not quite lost yet.
I understand that it's unlikely. I understand that the math isn't really working in our favor at this point.
Don't mistake his diehard commitment for unruliness. Hudson says he's not among the Sanders delegates who are booing pro-Clinton speakers at the convention.
I was raised better than that.
Hudson thinks the party stacked the deck against Sanders, but his frustration is not so great that he's willing to see Trump get elected.
Will I vote for Hillary is probably the question you really want to know. I'll plug my nose, I'll eat my vegetables, and I'll pull the lever for Hillary if need be.
Hudson is 36. Brenda Knapp of Juneau is a couple of decades older.
I'm here as a volunteer with the Alaska delegation.
Knapp wore not only her 2016 Hillary button, but her old Hillary button from 2008, the year Clinton lost the nomination to Barack Obama. Knapp says she knows the pain and anger of seeing your candidate lose. But she says it shouldn't take too long for the Sanders supporters to get on board with Clinton.
You can express some dissatisfaction, but don't keep it up, you know.
Knapp says she was reminded of 1968. Back then, she and other young Democrats saw their favorite long-shot candidate on the left, Eugene McCarthy, lose to the party's establishment candidate, Hubert Humphrey.
What happened is that not enough of us probably got behind Hubert Humphrey, and as a consequence, we had 8 years of Richard Nixon. That could happen again, and this would be, Trump is much scarier than Richard Nixon.
Knapp says she hopes today's Sanders supporters know the story of 1968 and avoid a repeat. Reporting from Philadelphia, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Juneau Assembly has made changes to the proposed Juneau Equal Rights Ordinance, which would create non-discrimination laws for the capital city. If passed, it would add protections under sexual orientation, gender identity, and, in the newest draft, gender expression. During a work session this week, the Assembly focused most of its time on the ordinance, now in its second draft. Some of the proposed changes included adding ministerial exemptions. If included, the exemption would make it okay for an educational religious institution to consider the applicant's religion. The Juneau Assembly did not make a final decision on including the exemption and asked the city's attorney for possible alternate language. The Assembly voted to delete a section regarding discrimination in public activities or programs that receive grants or other forms of financial assistance from the city. Assembly members Jesse Keel and Lauren Jones agreed it was a non-issue within the ordinance. Another change focused on housing, adding the lessee or renter as an individual allowed to make housing preferences. Owners already have this freedom. The Juneau Assembly will go through the third draft of the ordinance at its next Committee of the Whole meeting, which will take place on August 15th. Well, this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.